WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, this is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of The New Yorker and WNYC Studios.
Don't sing love songs, you'll wake my mother. She's sleeping here, right by my side.
That voice, that ringing, remarkable voice, belongs to Joan Baez, circa 1960, singing the first song on her first album. Baez was just 19 at the time, and she would soon become one of the defining voices of folk music, as it gained a much wider audience in the 1960s. She performed with Pete Seeger. She sang We Shall Overcome at the March on Washington. She played Woodstock. And in 1972, she joined a peace delegation to North Vietnam, where she was caught in the bombing of Hanoi. Baez is 77 years old now, and earlier this year she released a new album called Whistle Down the Wind, and she said it might be her last album, but you never know. She joined me at the studio at WNYC. Tell me a little bit about Whistle Down the Wind, how this album came to be, what you want it to be. It seems to mirror in some way your very first record in some ways, in a very conscious way.
It does. I mean, it started, the very first thought about it was of some kind of bookend, because I had already started thinking about, pretty much winding down. It's like the first album. It's simple. There's certainly a hint of social consciousness in it. They're pretty songs. A couple of them were written for me. I think the depth of it comes from the two songs, which actually I'll sing today. One of them is Another World, and the other is The President Sang Amazing Grace, because those are the powerhouses of songs. And without those, it would have been a really beautiful album, but wouldn't have the depth that it has.
How do you feel about songwriting as opposed to doing covers lately? Is it more interesting to you to do covers?
Well, first of all, you have to know that I quit songwriting about over 25 years ago. And I didn't quit it. It quit.
It quit.
It quit. Yeah. The channeling or whatever was going on just stopped. And rather, I mean, I didn't really want to go to round robins and learn how to write songs. You know, I just at that point started doing everybody else's music. And that's what I've done since then.
Was that devastating in a way that you felt the songs were not coming for wherever they come
from? No, I didn't realize it until I'd written some couple that were so bad that it was really time to move on. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, when I wrote poetry for a lot of years, that stopped as well. So now I paint, and I think that's going to stick.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
And is that what you're doing with most of your days, is painting?
When I'm home, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you seem to be doing a lot of listening, too, and a lot of listening went into this record, meaning with contemporary artists who are a good deal younger than
you, younger than me as well. And this first song that you're going to perform is Another World, and it's by a performer named Anoni. Can you tell me a little bit about her?
Well, I don't know her personally. We text now a little bit. She seems very spiritual, and, you know, her life is deeply meaningful to her, and this song is deeply meaningful to me. Somebody wrote down all of my thoughts in a simple song.
That's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So,
Why don't you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't do that to that thing. Oh, my God, it's so beautiful.
Okay, this is Another World. I need another place. Will there be peace? I need another world. This one's nearly gone. Still have too many dreams. Never seen the light. I need another world. This one's nearly gone. Another world. Another world. I'm gonna miss the sea. I'm gonna miss the snow. I'm gonna miss the bees. I'll miss the things that grow. I'm gonna miss the trees. Gonna miss the sun. I'll miss the animals. And I'll miss you, everyone. Another world. Another world. I need another place. Will there be peace? I need another world. This one's nearly gone. I'm gonna miss the birds. Singing all their songs. I'm gonna miss the wind. It's been kissing me so long. Another world. Another world. Another world.
It's a beauty, a beauty.
Isn't it?
You say you were texting with Anoni about this song. How much do you tease out what the song is about?
Oh, I didn't really try.
Or you wouldn't do that?
I didn't need to. I mean, for me, it's mostly about climate change, you know.
But you've been through a certain number of political moments, and 60s and many moments in between.
Mm-hmm.
And how does this seem similar or different?
It's just, I couldn't have dreamed this up. All the stuff I've been through in all the countries and all the dictatorships and, and through all that, if somebody had said, can you write a story about how bad can it get? I couldn't have written it, nor could anybody I know. That it's just, you know, what we are facing in the administration is evil and it's cruel. There's no empathy. Zero empathy. So it leaves you or leaves me thinking, how am I going to conduct my life? It's, you know, it's the year of the bully. And to bully people now seems to be okay. To lying, no problem. No perjury, not a problem. And so that is the new normal.
And how does it change the texture of your life day to day, waking up in the morning as you proceed through the day?
Well, I think, I mean, I've heard other people say this too. It oftentimes just hits in the night in the form of this terrible anxiety, and you realize that it's real. I mean, it's not some neurotic anxiety. I'm anxious about the state of the world, which, you know, it is terrible. And so one thing is to, one of my things I suggest, spend a lot of time in denial.
That's the great advice.
Yeah. And don't expect much. I mean, keep the bar really low.
Yeah.
Keep laughing.
You know, I was just watching a documentary. I forget which one it was, because this scene appears in so many documentaries, of you singing at the March on Washington.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how you visualize in your mind moments like that in your life, which are now distant, and they're iconic in the minds of other people.
Yeah.
But you're there. You're holding the guitar. You're at the microphone and kind of lousy sound system and singing to what was a 500,000 people, whatever it was. Do you think about these moments in your past? And
you know, I think as I get older, sometimes I do, or somebody will show me a photograph, I think, oh my God, I was there, and those people were there, and Dr. King said what he said. And sometimes going into a, quote, historic moment, you know it, and other times you don't know it. In that case, I think by midway through the morning,
you knew.
We all knew it, yeah. Yeah.
You mean there's sometimes that you're in the middle of an event that turns out to be iconic and you have no idea?
I think
a festival, a political moment.
Yeah. I was just thinking about Woodstock, and it was a little bit of both, because I took the last helicopter in, and looking down and seeing these people, they're like ants, you know, they're just gobs of people. And so I had a hint then of that this was going to be something very big, but it was after the fact that you realize, oh my goodness, that's made a dent in people's lives forever.
And in yours.
And in mine, yeah.
You know, this next song that you're going to do, I went to Charleston not just days after the shooting to write about these families and these relatives of people who had lost people in the church there in this slaughter, and it was extraordinary. And then the funeral that followed, that President Obama went to, it seems like a million years ago.
It does.
The idea of a president capable of showing empathy to such a degree that not only is the crowd with him and feels they feel like allies, but he's able to sing the song and begin the song that lifts people up, as opposed to issue a tweet that depresses the hell out of them.
Yes.
How do you remember that terrible incident, and why did you decide to cover this song?
Well, covering this song was a no-brainer. I mean, it was whatever feelings I had then or in the future. This song just dropped out of the sky. It's written by Zoe Mulford. I did not know, and most people didn't know. And I need to tune the guitar.
Take your time.
I mean, if I was quicker at tuning,
you're
I would
killing
just
me
go
knocking
into...
that guitar around. You're
no,
killing
I'm not
me.
Not knocking it. You're hearing it too loudly. Should I just go ahead?
Yeah.
Okay.
A young man came to a house of prayer. They did not ask what brought him there. He was not friend, he was not kin, but they opened the door and they let him in. And for an hour the stranger stayed. He sat with them and he seemed to pray. But then that young man drew a gun and killed 9 people, old and young. In Charleston, in the month of June, the mourners gathered in a room. The president came to speak some words, and the cameras rolled, and the nation heard. No one could say what must be said, for all the living and the dead. So on that day and in that place, the president sang Amazing Grace. The president sang Amazing Grace. We argued where to lay the blame on one man's hate or our nation's shame, some sickness of the mind and soul, and how our wounds might be made whole. No one could say what must be said for all the living and the dead. So on that day and in that place, the president sang Amazing Grace. My president sang Amazing Grace.
Last line is my president. There's a switch.
Yeah,
from the president to my president. Is this the only president you felt of as in that way about?
Yeah, and I had to decide whether I was going to use that or not because Zoe wrote it. My president. I thought, all of them. They have to lie, cheat, and steal, and do all this stuff. Yeah. He was a statesman, he was smart, he was caring, and in spite of whatever the warts were, and there were some, Afghanistan, border crossings, a lot of it. He was just somebody I like.
Did you meet him?
Yeah, I met him. I was in the middle of a snowstorm, and it was his inauguration. And I went and I met him, and it was freezing out, and my feet had shrunk, and I couldn't keep my high heels on. They stuffed things in there for me, like cotton wads.
But you wore high heels to the inauguration? Very cold that day.
I kicked them off and went barefoot. It was
good solution.
It was a good solution.
That's a great solution.
Well, your feet shrink, and you're going to be schlepping and making noises all the way to the president. So I went barefoot, and it made him very happy.
You totally embraced the idea of political songwriting and its connection to politics and its connection to the social world. Mm-hmm. Bob Dylan did the other thing. He ran away from it. He wrote some of the great political songs of the time and then did his very best to either reject the label or pretend to. It's hard to make sense of it now. Mm-hmm. I take him at his word. What did you make of that? The kind of wanting to be distant from Masters of War and saying, it would be great for the kids, or it would sell.
Or what it would sell, I reached a point very recently when I was painting him for commissions. And I played his music 24 hours a day for a while, and any kind of criticism, resentment, old bullshit just absolutely
melted away.
Melted, gone. And all I think now is, what a lucky human being I am that I was there at that point in history.
Because I'm steeped in this stuff. I read your book, and especially in the first appearance, when you toured together, and then he very painfully pushes you away. His behavior was awful.
Pretty awful. Yeah, awful.
And your tone in that book, which is written in the kind of mid to late '80s, is still
really bitter. I mean, I held on to that for a long time. And then, recently he said some nice things about me. That's nice. But that isn't what triggered just saying, okay, just drop all this. It was too beautiful what we got from him. It doesn't matter. He wrote us our arsenal. And then we went on and did the work.
What do you do about old songs that are particularly hard to sing? Do you just junk them or find new ways to finesse them?
Well, my brilliant sound man said, because I was grumbling, I couldn't do Forever Young anymore because I love it.
Because of the top.
Because of the top. he said, well, let Grace do that. You know, the woman who tuned my guitar is this woman who sings with me. She has a fantastic voice, and she can hit all the notes that I used to be able to hit.
She's out on stage with you, not ghosting you underneath the stage.
Yeah. She's out on stage with me, yeah. We took her out of the box and put her on the stage.
I think that's excellent.
And it's beautiful. I mean, we've turned it into an encore because it's so special. She takes that note that I'll, you know, never ever be able to make again.
Are there moments when something breaks through, or is it just a physiological thing? You can't go above X note and don't even try.
There is a thing called cellular memory, and there are some songs that I can do now. This mostly from cell memory.
For example,
Swing Low. I still do Swing Low. And it's a different sound when I go up and hit that note, but it's still something I can get to and sustain. A lot of those notes I can get to, but I can't sustain them, so I come popping back down with a matter
of sounds an awful lot like being an athlete.
It is. You know, it's the muscle. And then after a while, you're not going to be able to do that anymore.
No. Are you just as happy not doing this?
Mm-hmm. I am not. You mean the work and the vocal stuff? Yeah. You know, it's probably now about 7 years ago, and I was hoping, because I was having such a hard time with the voice, I thought, well, I'll go and see some ear, nose, and throat guy. Maybe he'll say I've got nodes all over my vocal cord, and he'll take them off, and I'll be perfect. Yeah. And he poked around, and he put the thing down my throat, and we watched it on the screen, and I said, well, is this kind of it? He said, you're exactly where you should be at 71. And I said, oh, you know, that's a shame. And I think that if I'd started training, I mean, like Judy Collins, she still holds those notes up there.
How does she do that?
I think she trained really early and trained classically. I mean, I joke with her that she could make notes that I never dream of making again.
Right. Whereas I think Joni Mitchell, the voice started changing really
early.
Yeah,
I think so too.
So you've got two nights, you've got two big concerts, Friday and Saturday night this week, I think it's fair to say. And how do you prepare for something like this?
Well, I'm already prepared from this tour. There's nothing I fret about.
You don't get nervous?
Not really.
So you don't have dreams like you wake up in the middle of the night in a terror sweat, you've forgotten the lyrics to Diamonds and Rust or something?
You know, I have several times, and it just makes everybody laugh, so don't worry about it.
So it's good showmanship.
Yeah, right.
Perfect. Well, I wish you all the best for this tour. And Joan, it's a great, 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 great honor.
It's been a pleasure for me. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Oh, fare thee well, I must be gone and leave you for a while. Wherever I go, I will return.
Joan Baez is on her Fare Thee Well tour well into the spring of 2019, so you still have plenty of chances to see her. I'm David Remnick. Thanks for joining us on the New Yorker Radio Hour this week. And until next time, stay in touch with us on Twitter at New Yorker Radio.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.